welcome to another ITB Racing podcast, this time focusing on the two-day Derby Festival at Epsom. We're recording this on Thursday evening, just about 10 miles away from Epsom. It's hammering with rain here, but apparently not at the track at the moment. And joining me to discuss the 2 days racing, we have Ed Chamberlain, Francesca Camani, and of course a podcast would not be complete without Kevin Blake and Emmett Kennedy. Very good evening, everyone. Looking forward to it.
Oh, big time, Richard.
Yeah, good evening. It's great to be here at Epsom, another year on from last year. It was such an awesome meeting last year with an Abel in the storm and then that big outsider in the Derby.
Just realised we should probably all have answered at the one time. They're going, oh, you can't wait. We're enthusiastic. Yeah, exactly. Quite a subdued start there, so let's pick up the pace.
We are talking about the weather again. I mean, in Abel, it was actually pretty quick when she won, even though it was running a thunderstorm. But this time we've had thunderstorms popping about. And the ground looks likely, at least for Oaks Day, to be on the soft side, Kevin.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not ideal in many ways. I suppose we all, you know, conduct our analysis in the months building up to the race with a view to good ground at the very least, if not good to firm. So it's a changing variable, but it's something that at least we have time to digest and make our adjustments. And I suppose the real interesting question here is, like, one would imagine they'll end up coming stand side in the Oaks, which does change things a little bit with regard to, evaluating the draw and everything else.
We were all scrabbling around trying to work out, we think it's Cassia, don't we? The last time
2002,
the field came over, which was the slowest run time for an Oaks for a considerable period of time. And it does change the complexion of the race. We'll move on to the Oaks in a moment.
But Richard, I would say, being the athlete of the team, I walked around that entire course today with Brian Gleeson, and it wasn't bad at all, honestly. It was good to soft ground, but that could be heavy if they catch these thunderstorms, or it could, if there wasn't rain, that would dry out to good very quickly.
And the other point to make is, of course, if it rains during racing tomorrow, which is a possibility, but not overly likely, we do have that fenced-off portion you would have seen on the inside running row, which is always opened up for the Derby, and it's further to come over in the Derby. So if they're going to come over, it's more likely to be in the Oaks than the Derby. We'll be looking at tomorrow's racing in a moment or two. And also thanks to many of you that got in touch with our plea as to what you remembered of Derby Day. We've had loads of memories. Lamtara, for example, for the Walter Swinburne, Alex Scott. Rather tragic sort of reminiscence for the likes of Paul Jackson, Phil Pinkney, and also David Berag. Sharastani for Michael Colbatch, who'd backed the horse at 25-1, but Alex Dungan still reckons it was the best horse never to win a Derby. Dancing Brave, of course, failing to run down Sharastani. So let's move on to the first of the two classics and talk about the Oaks. I think it's fair to say it doesn't, on the face of it, look a vintage renewal.
No, because so many of the fancied horses over the winter have fallen by the wayside. Latterly, of course, the John Gosden horse, which is a real shame, and it's wide open, but I think almost impossible, really.
Yeah, I know it's easy to look at it and say, oh, not the best renewal ever, but I tend to be a bit more glass half full and say, actually, we might see something that comes out and wins impressively, and then we're all saying, actually, it was a good Oaks. So, look, we've got the Musidora winner, we've got the Cheshire Oaks winner, we've got the Leaford Oaks trial winner, which, yeah, maybe they're not the strongest trials. We'd love to have the Guineas winner in there. We've got Bye Bye Baby, last start winner over in Ireland, so it's not terrible. Let's look at it positively.
Emmett, you're more of a glass half empty, well, glass totally empty person, to be honest. how do you view the Oaks?
Well, I haven't had any alcohol yet, but later on tonight there's going to be a barbecue. My view on the Oaks is that, a little bit like Ed actually, is there was an awful lot of excitement about horses like September and beautifully bred fillies like that, and of course John Gosden's horse, and it is a shame they're not there. But we're still left with a really exciting juvenile from last year in Wild Illusion, who I think was disappointing in the 1,000 guineas, and then Aidan O'Brien throws five at this race, and if you think that because Ryan Moore is a magic wand that automatically means she's number one, then look back at the Oaks results from the last 5 years and remember that Aidan O'Brien is adept at having big price winners at this race. All five will run, maybe one not necessarily on merit, but I will go out and lead and set a decent enough pace, but everything else will certainly be trying. And I think it's a fascinating renewal. In terms of a selection, I'd go for Bye Bye Baby. She's from a family who improved for Stepping Up and Trip. O'Brien's ability to improve a filly just seems to know no ends. And Winter is a really good example of that from last year. Like, she was trained by David Watchman the year before and just improved. She just turned inside out, really, when she went to Ballydoyle. And we've seen that with other fillies that joined them as well. She was running on fairly soft ground for most of last year, like an awful lot of horses. And last time out in the Blue Wind, she was really impressive. Wayne Lorden will take the ride. He's already a classic winning rider for Aidan O'Brien, and I think she will give you a really good run for your money in what is a very, very open renewal.
I would just love the Oaks to be won by something named after a Bay City Rollers song. It's right up my street. I can hear that in the commentary.
Wayne Lorden's bye-bye baby to his rival.
Well, you'll be able to give her a good shout, Richard, because that's probably going to be the pacemaker, isn't it?
So which one do you reckon of the Irish, Kevin? If you were forced to choose between the battalions, the Aidan O'Brien battalions, what would you go?
It's tough, Richard. I'd probably go with Magic Wand. I thought she took a big, big step forward last time. She'd shown very little in her first two starts. She would have been on course for a very attractive handicap mark if they'd given her quite her spin for her third run. But they went and won at Chester, and I thought she was still very raw there, raw in front. She was pricking her ears, you know, much of the way down the straight. And just, for me, she just looked like a filly that was waiting for company. So I suspect there'll be quite a bit more to come. There'll be many hoping that Forever Together could perhaps close that gap or even reverse that form. She was clearly better than the bare form on the day, but I think Magic Wand showed an awful lot of potential there for more to come. And like Francesca said, you know, we may only have one Group 1 winner in this field, but there's an awful lot of fillies that could potentially take a big step forward. And by the time we get to the aftermath of the race, we'll be saying, well, you know, that wasn't a promising filly on paper, and she's gone and delivered. You know, Enable will fit that bill last year. You know, there wouldn't have been a huge amount of people going into that race thinking Enable would have ended up being one of the season's superstars, and look where we ended up with her.
Okay, time for selections then on the Oaks. Emmett, I'll start with you.
Bye-bye baby for me.
Okay.
It's a big one for Godolphin, this, isn't it? Mm. Their recent record in classics. I haven't a clue, to be honest. I've rowing with Jason after the Cheshire Oaks with Forever Together, which is a crazy price now. When she was a big price, I thought she was interesting, but I'm going to rely on Francesca Kimani.
Well, I actually was quite keen on Forever Together in the Cheshire Oaks that day, and I thought she was pretty unlucky.
Did you like her in the paddock that day?
I did. Her and Aidan had three in the race from memory, and her and Magic Wand were the two picks. They both looked like beautiful specimens, and I think Magic Wand had a little bit more still to come, but having watched the replay of the Cheshire Oaks quite a few times, she, yes, was the beneficiary of a really good ride, Magic Wand, from Ryan in front, and he potentially nicked it. He didn't go all that fast and kicked away very fast the last two furlongs. But she's just got that real touch of class about her. She was an expensive yearling. She's a sister to Chiquita. And like Kevin says, I think there's plenty more to come. So she's my pick.
I'm with Perfect Clarity. Okay. I think I really like the arc of her improvement.
The Brits.
I tell you, she's by Nathaniel, who is a remarkable sire, and that, you know, they don't tend to do all that well at two, and they take a massive step up. And I really liked what she did in the Lincolnshire Oaks trial. I feel that she'll really come on from that experience. You know, she comes here as an inexperienced filly, but I feel she would have learned an awful lot from that. And if she goes and wins, we'd all say, well, of course she did, you know. Mm-hmm. Unbeaten filly, full of promise. And I know the bare form now leaves her with a fair bit to find with the likes of Wild Illusion, but I could foresee a big step up coming from her, and hopefully a bold bid to come.
Yeah, and if you look back through the pedigree, there's plenty of Oaks history in there. I think
plenty of Oaks failures.
Yeah, well, Claxon, Relaxi and all that sort of thing are all in there. So, to be honest, I think they're very interesting families. So Perfect Clarity could provide Clive Cox with a classic success in the Oaks. I would go as it stands at the moment for Forever Together, who I think, as you say, the problem is the value's gone. But calling that race at Chester, clearly she got a bit tangled up at a crucial
stage.
Had
a bit of Wings of Eagles about it.
Chappers would have definitely thought so, I think. But yeah.
But isn't the fact that we've all gone for something different just an example of what an impossible race it is? Like, it's all after the fact, we can all look like geniuses, but just beforehand, it's such a difficult race to try and crack.
I think it's 100% certain that after the fact, we won't look like geniuses, to be honest.
Well, bye-bye,
we might have flicked a winner, but we won't look like geniuses. What we would be a genius, does anyone see Cracksman getting beaten in the Coronation Cup? I don't want to dwell too.
Why not?
Okay.
Yeah.
Go on.
Bye.
Go on.
I don't know by what, but
I know why. By what?
Well, go on.
He's run twice at Epsom, and he hasn't been impressive on either occasion, really. Yeah. He was much the best horse in the Derby. The way it's turned out, much the best horse.
And at the current,
look at his performance that day.
Is there a question mark over stamina? Is there a question mark over a mile four for him? And also, isn't he in this race essentially because Enable's out, and so this race has become available for him, and he can slot in there? Like, I think he's really a 10 furlong horse. There's an
You're
awful
about to be shot down. Look at him.
Yeah. Lots of negatives here. I mean, I know it's
so. Look, there's a lot to like about him, and obviously he's one of the stars of the season. And if he gets beaten, it's disappointing. There's no question. It's very, very disappointing. But he's threes on, fours on at Epsom.
Take him on.
I have absolutely no interest in backing a horse at that price. I will take a swing and Kevin Blake's going to start giggling now any second at Yucatan.
He's got an interesting profile.
He's got a very interesting profile. Yeah,
confusing
Second in the dog, second in the region. So did I. On the say-so of a certain Kevin Blake. So he was second in the Racing Post Trophy as a juvenile, placed in Derby trials last season, and then he didn't get injured. They just pulled stumps with him. They went.
He didn't get injured.
No, he did have a little setback.
But they were expecting him to come back in the autumn, weren't they? And then they just didn't. They left him off.
7:30, by the way.
Yeah, I think it would have been a rush, so they decided to.
The problem is, I expected you all to say yes for Cracksman. So
sorry about this. We're expanding. Here's the thing.
Quickly, selections then.
The horse is a huge price.
Yucatan.
And I would go with Yucatan, win, place, and show.
Well, I
don't
like
think you get a show with 86.
No, we'll go.
Can't get
we'll
a word on Edgeways here, for God's sake.
Okay,
I like Cracksman because I think Ed's wrong. He's a completely different horse this time, a year on from when he ran in the Derby last year. He's bigger, he's stronger, he's more mature. He'll handle the undulations. The only interesting one for me outside of it is Wins Toss from Germany, who's a dual Group 1 winner, or at least one Group 1 winner. And when you watch his races, he's impressive. Yes, he's only beating German horses, so it might be a completely different level of form, but he's interesting.
But how much do you want to 1-3 then? One to three.
I would be very concerned about Cracksman on the track. I think that what makes Cracksman such a talented horse is he's got a very long stride, but he's got a quite an unusual way of doing it, and I just don't think the track suits him all that well. I think he wants a flat track or a stiff track, a much more orthodox track than Epsom, and that's a big concern for me. I take Hawkbill against him.
Well, we've got three against him then, so yes. Hawkbill.
Only the price, really.
That is fair. It's worth remembering that, of course, his Derby prep was partly compromised by him not running in the Danty because they didn't think he wanted soft ground. So
yeah,
we have gone full circle with him, and obviously the return back to 10 furlongs was a question at Ascot.
I spoke to John Gosden about that. It was purely because it was 16 days before the Derby. Forget the ground thing.
Okay, well, there you go. That's a look at the Coronation Cup. Just before we take a break, a few more memories from various people who tweeted in about their best Derby memories. Paul Moir, the Michael Barcelona, a celebration from Paul Downey, and also See the Stars for Mike Newell, also mentioned Workforce. He believes they are the two best modern-day Derby winners. Whilst if it comes up muddy, there'll be thoughts of Tinoso, who beat Carlingford Castle in a bog. Gary McKenzie remembered that one. We're going to have a special guest in a moment or two to help mark your card as we build up towards the Derby at Epsom on Saturday. So now time to concentrate on the big race of the meeting. It is, of course, the Investec Derby run on Saturday, and currently, as we stand, a field of 12. If you add in when stall one has been a non-runner, I believe it's 0 from 114 over a mile and a half at Epsom in double-figure fields for stall one. If you walk the course, there is a right-hand turn that in theory means they have to cover more ground, but it isn't a massive one. It's one of those when you walk it that you struggle to make sense of the stats. So how big a concern is stall one?
You say you struggle to make sense of it, but actually if you watch back past derbies and probably most races over a mile and a half, you'll see that the horse drawn one is often at a bit of a disadvantage jumping off because the group do head to that far side rail, so they're a little bit detached and they have to work a bit to get across, and then essentially the group come back to the inside rail and the horse in one inevitably ends up on the rail smothered by a whole lot of other horses. Now Ryan obviously is not the world's best jockey for no reason, so he'll be very much aware of this, and I'm sure amongst the team they'll have a plan to probably try and get off that rail and get him into a better position, because then when you come down into the straight, you go down the hill and there's a camber which makes the horses roll down to the inside rail, and you'll have all the other horses on your outside, so he'll have to negotiate his way out. And so many derbies you see horses finishing down the outside, coming from further back, peeling out and finishing. So to me it's a bit of a negative, and those stats don't lie.
I think he's going to be dropped in, Richard. I think he absolutely has to be dropped in, really, because they will be thinking about his stamina, and the horse has an awful lot of speed. He's shown a wonderful turn of foot in the Racing Post Trophy and in the Guineas, and I think he's taken both Ryan Moore and Donegal by surprise in just how well he has quickened. So I think Ryan will be anxious to conserve that turn of foot as late as he can. And like Francesca says, look, it depends what you want to do from stall one. And if he's going to drop in, you have to bear in mind that he's missed the kick to one extent or another in three of his four starts. He's only ever jumped on terms once. And the stalls at Epsom are in the middle of the track. And generally, it's something I've watched for years and years. The horse that's in the outermost stall, when there's open air on their outside, they'll generally jump a little bit outwards and they'll generally miss the kick a little bit. So you've got to add that into his natural inclination that to miss the kick a little bit. So he's going to be held up. And for me, probably a bigger concern than the draw itself is he's drawn away from his help, if you will, which isn't ideal. I'm sure Ryan would have preferred one or more of his stablemates to be drawn a little bit closer to
him.
So
we've got Kew Gardens in 12, for example, the Pentagon in 11. Zabriskie was held up last time in 8, and Delano Roosevelt is probably least likely thought to be ridden forward in stall 4. So let's play Aidan O'Brien. Come on, he talks enough tactics. We've got 5, and we're trying, presumably, to ensure Saxon Warrior has the best possible chance of winning. That's, after all, our number one. How do we play our hand?
Well, I think last year they went a zillion miles an hour, didn't they? Because they didn't really know what their best horse was. And it was a bit of a surprise when your brilliant commentary, when he came from the clouds with wings of ease and they all rolled their eyes. I don't think they'll go a million miles an hour this time. I'm surprised they've got so many runners in the race. I said to you, Cheska, I thought they'd have 2 or 3. Because Saxon Warrior is so far clear, really. You sense. And I think this draw thing's great news for Saxon Warrior supporters. It's going to help the price. He could go off odds against. He's, you know, they're touching even money right now. I think he could be miles clear of the rest.
Okay, so come on, tactics. How do we play?
I think they'll go a nice steady. I don't think they'll go a million miles an hour like some have. And I'm hoping that DXB will be up there and might give them no option. And Night to Behold won't hang about either. So
if you're Ryan, where do you go?
I think you can only be held up, and I think they have to make it a proper pace, because if he's going to be held up in the final third of the race, they have to go quick.
That's where. I mean, if you watch the derbies for O'Brien, it doesn't really matter what they do to halfway, but they always send one on downhill because it breaks the field up, and as a result, you're not tangled up, and that's what I'd expect them to do. I think the reason they've run so many is just to make sure that they can't surround Saxon Warrior. You've got an extra dimension. Because you can't leave these horses loose on the lead, as you saw the Night to Behold and the Derby Trophy. If you give them enough rope, they are still genuine Group 1 horses. They might not come back at all. So you might win it with something else. But I can see them kicking halfway down the hill if they haven't done so before.
DXB will be gone by now.
You're right, he will be gone.
out the back of the telly.
Well, I strongly suspect that Ryan will not want to be on the rail. He'll drop in and he will be anxious to get 2 off the rail if he can at all. I don't think he'll know he's on the best horse. I don't think he'll want to be the master of his own destiny as best he can. And being on the rail isn't really conducive to that, because when you're a short price fav in a big field, everything's riding to beat you. So if he's got one on his outside, he's not going to be comfortable with that. No matter how good or bad it is, he's ideally going to want to have a shot at the outside if he can get it. I can see Kew Gardens making it, the Pentagon chasing him. The Pentagon will stay very well. I could see them sending him at the top of the straight and hoping to draw a few waters into the race early. And Ryan will just make his way into the race on the outside and win blowing kisses to the crowd.
I have real concerns here about him. Like, you look back at the Guineas and it's a brilliant performance, and he was described as a monster over the winter in the way that he developed, and he was carrying condition, and the quotes from Aidan O'Brien beforehand were along the lines of, yeah, this was always the plan to start here in the 2000 Guineas, but that being said, you know, he'll improve an awful lot. And maybe they were expecting an Australia style run from him, that he'd finish placed and then come to the Derby, and in the end he turned out just being too good and surprised him with that turn of foot. But now you are coming out of stall one, and from a betters perspective, we can talk about the tactics of what exactly Team Coolmore are going to do, and no one's better at that than them until they get it wrong and then everyone criticizes them, but they tend to get it right. But if you're betting on this now with a fresh mind, he's odds on, and he might go odds against, but he might not. You just don't know how the market is going to play. I would not take the risk. I've seen too many bad things happen at Epsom. I wasn't even keen on backing him at a short price before he got stall one. I certainly don't want to back him at odds on now. The problem is, who do you go with in terms of an each way one? I did see a sneaky one in DXB. No, I didn't see a sneaky one in DXB.
Let's deal with DXB as we keep dealing with him. Make the case for DXB.
I've been making the case for DXB since Chester.
Go on.
Give me the one horse in the field that's won round Epsom, who we know handles the track.
What does that matter?
One horse we know in the field who goes on the heavy ground, which it might well be on Saturday. And I want a horse who's finally going to get the tactics that I wanted to see from DXB all season, which James Doyle for some reason didn't do in the trial at Epsom. I thought he'd bang him out in front and make all, and he dropped him in. It was very weird. And then at Chester, he could never win from that draw, could never do what he wanted, got a bump from Young Ross in the straight and ran on nicely. I think he'll reverse that form, personally.
So does he lead?
Saturday. It depends what the O'Brien horses do up front, doesn't he? But he could do, why not?
I think he's got to track him.
And
he's
got to track. We know he stays.
He can't take on the O'Brien.
Well, then Sylvester's just got to be clever, hasn't he? He can sit off them, or he can do either. Doesn't matter. Mm.
I've really come around.
But as long as he goes down the hill and Sylvester kicks on and says, "Catch me if you can, I don't care."
You've converted Kevin, which is
no. I can believe that.
It's quite funny because we were messaging about this the other morning.
Face commanding would be so funny. Imagine he goes clear in the straight. I would love it.
And when the rain started to arrive, I said, "Oh, soft ground derby," and Ed sends three separate messages, DXB, and my reply was, "What a sad day for the derby that would be." But subsequently, I spent all that day watching all the videos of all the horses in the derby, quite literally from their first start to their last. And DXB largely passed me by last year because he was quite an unspectacular 2-year-old. But when you watch him and his progress and get an idea in your mind of what his characteristics and preferences are, I can absolutely see the case because I think he's a soft ground horse. He stays really well. And the tactics are crucial. They haven't ridden them the right way in his two starts this season.
Okay, I can agree with you to a certain degree, but I cannot watch that Chester race and think that he should beat Young Rascal.
Yeah, I think the same. Actually.
I just don't think they made enough use. And I'm not blaming anyone for Chester because ultimately he was drawn poorly and he missed the kick a little bit. So they were obliged to ride him with a little bit of patience. But
they were sort of alongside and Young Rascal sort of got a little bit of a squeeze. And he's only had 3 runs, whereas DXB has had 5 million and 3.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's sort of, I don't know. I can understand why you might alight on him as an each way chance, but I can't see how you then can't believe that Young Rascal won't beat him.
I can't believe we're spending this long on DXB.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose the variable with Young Rascal is that you don't know he handles the track, and that would be a slight concern for me. And I'd be very worried about Young Rascal in the early stages because he has shown a slight lack of early pace in his races, and I just worry that he could be right back in the final third in the early stages, and that could leave him with an awful lot to do.
I can hear Matt Chapman screaming now as well that James Doyle did all he could, didn't he, to ride Young Rascal as opposed to the commitment he had to DXB. So
yeah,
clearly from his point of view.
Yeah.
I was going to say, justice for James Doyle on this podcast if he goes and wins on Young Rascal. The more we talk about this race, the more confused I am about everything. And so
that's well for the podcast.
I'm gonna go for the absolute outsider of the field and for history to repeat itself. Super Here stupid. Comes Padraig Beggy. Okay. Flying down the outside on Zabriskie.
You should point out, it wouldn't, yeah, I was going to say, you should,
don't
point out, you should point out, it's not going to be repeating itself because we got his name wrong. but apart from that,
great day for Paddy Beggy.
Yeah.
Padraig Beggy and Zabriskie, he'll stay. Like, look, I can see him finishing third, and he's 50-1, he's 66-1 in places.
There's a cycling line in there for you, commentator.
Yeah.
Zabriskie, he's a cyclist.
David Zabriskie, yeah.
I did not know that, but we'll go with it.
He's in the American Postal team with Lance Armstrong and co.
See.
I really don't think we want that analogy. I'd go with him each way, just in such an open year where really anything can happen.
An open year? It's even money favourite.
Saxon Warrior obviously could absolutely destroy this field.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm waiting to.
He could destroy this field, but I'd like to back something each way, and so I'll go with him.
Okay, well let's mention Roaring Lion. The main problem from my point of view is having watched the videos again is, if you fancy Roaring Lion, why should he reverse form with
exactly.
Saxon Warrior?
Oh, exactly. I'll give you a case. Because he's trained by John Gosden, who to me did a remarkable thing getting him to progress really from that run in the, what was it, the Craven, and then to the Guineas where he improved, and then in the Dante, I mean, he improved out of sight to me in terms of attitude, in terms of temperament, in terms of, you know, staying straight. I know he wasn't straight as a dice, but he was much, much better at York. And to me, I think at Newmarket, first time out, he was unfit. He's quite a roly-poly, round kind of horse. I think he wasn't ready when he ran first time. But in the Guineas, he ran really well. And yes, in the Dante, they possibly didn't go that fast. But the way he kicked clear in the last...
The way he quickened.
Mm. Yeah.
That's my worry, is that he won it by showing speed off a steady pace, which is the French
style. I know,
derby,
but to me,
scenario,
his attitude, his temperament, and his style of racing, and again the John Gosden factor, suggests that he will settle in the run. He's got, what's he drawn? He's fairly well drawn.
He's drawn five, which shouldn't be a problem.
Five, so he should be able to get into a nice position in the run. Should be able to get a bit of cover. Should be able to switch off. And yes, I know on pedigree you could say he's not particularly bred to stay the trip, but if they settle him, just that speed he's got towards the end has surely got to hold him in good stead.
One thing you wouldn't be, you wouldn't want to be on his inside when he begins his run.
I don't want to be in the crowd at the furlong pole, because he could end up in there.
He's going to be heading down that Canberra,
Chester,
a race of knots, isn't it?
So I misheard the producer when we were York that day, and I thought they said he kept straight as a die. And they showed us the head on, and I said, here he is, keeping straight as a die. Violently left. I was like, what have I done?
Yeah, because and that's a serious concern, because every time in this horse's life on the race course, when he's seen the front, he's gone left. You know, the one day he didn't do it was in the Craven when Massara was off in the distance. You know, he just goes left. And if he thinks about doing that at Epsom, a track where you're naturally being dragged left by the camber, it could be a real concern. You know, if he's in front, it's not the end of the world, and you're probably on to a winner. But if he's being asked to quicken down, and I suspect they'll ride him quietly, if he's being asked to quicken down the outside with two furlongs to go, he's going to go left. I'd be shocked if he didn't, and that could cause him all sorts of problems.
Will he stay, Cheska? Will he stay?
I think he will. Yes, Pedigree suggests that he's not 100% bred to stay, but like I said, in his racing style, I think he relaxes well enough.
Mm. If he can turn that, produce that turn of foot at the end of 10 furlongs and then for the final two, it'd be great. I'm just not sure whether that's the case. A horse that's almost certain to stay, I think, is Hazapur, who won the trial in Ireland. A little earlier, we caught up with Dermot Weld's retained rider, Pat Smullen. Of course, he's had his own battle with cancer, and we started off by asking how he was.
Hi, Richard. Yeah, look, so far so good. Yeah, we think everything's going the right direction, but we've a lot of work to do yet. But yeah, we're chipping away at it and hopefully going the right direction.
Which is good to hear, Pat. It's Ed here. I loved hearing you on social media the other day saying it was going okay, but I know it's a tough battle. And just give us an idea of what treatment and what you're having to go through on a weekly basis.
Hi, Ed. Yeah, look, I had treatment yesterday, so to be totally honest with you, it feels like I went maybe three or four rounds with Conor McGregor or something. you know, that's the effect it has on you. But it's a tough program that I'm on. And but look, thankfully, hopefully, all that work and hard fitness over the years, and it will stand to me now. And I think it's very helpful. And you know, so look, it's as I say, there's nothing easy about it, but we seem to be going the right direction. And yeah, I get treatment every fortnight, and it knocks me out for about 3 or 4 days, but thankfully I bounce back from it pretty good. And and then it's sort of one week tough, one week good. So if it continues like that, I'll be happy with that.
Pat, it's Emmett here. I think it was a really pleasant surprise to see at the Curragh the other day. You must have been blown away by the reaction that you got from the crowd and from racing fans, and also from fans on social media as well, because this is the toughest battle of your life, but you're getting such support from the racing community and from fans alike. That must be a great support to you.
Oh, Emmett, look, it's been unbelievable, nothing short of it. And, you know, to go to the Guineas was a little goal I set myself from sort of middle of March when this happened. And you know, I just said that, you know, it'll be the day that I'd like to go racing, and thankfully we had a very good fine day, and the boss had a few runners, and Ava Hafner was over, who's been a huge supporter of mine and her father before my Glare Stud, and but we've become quite good friends as well as in business. So it was good to be there to try, and unfortunately her horse didn't run as well as we expected by Chiara Luna, but it was great to be there. And the support has been nothing short of overwhelming, and not alone here in Ireland, but worldwide it's been just amazing. And and that alone gives you huge encouragement to keep pushing forward when you're having a bad day.
And just for listeners, I'm sitting beside Ed, who I interviewed a few years ago on the Final Furlong podcast, and he talked about his own cancer battle. And remarkably, you know, you were in a bad way and somehow managed to fight his way through it, and is here now with us, thank God. And hopefully it's going to be the same with you as well. How much more of a battle is there for you, Pat? Like, how are you feeling?
Oh, look, I feel good, I mean, as regards, but look, it's a long haul. I mean, you know, as Ed will tell you, the medical team don't let you get too far ahead of yourself. It's a one day at a time situation. And but look, long term is the goal is to try and have surgery, and hopefully we get out of that and be back to full health, and that's the goal we're working towards, and hopefully that may happen within the year, or it may take a little bit longer. We just don't know, but we just have to take one day as it comes. We've got an amazing medical team taking care of me, so they know what they're doing, and I pretty much go along with it, to be honest.
That's great to hear, Pat, and good to hear such a positive attitude from you. Just turning attention to the Derby, tell us about Hazapur. You rode him in his first two starts. Do you think he can win it?
Hi, Francesca. Yeah, look, he's a typical Agacan horse, if that makes sense, in that, you know, the boss is just taking him along slowly. He had his two runs at two. He ran very green with me at the Curragh when we thought he might win, but it was a good maiden, and that experience wasn't lost on him at Galway. Now, here in that, Galway is a very undulating track, and I think the experience he gained there won't be lost on him on Saturday.
Great to hear from Pat, and Ed, it's obviously a big tough battle he's facing, but he's in good spirits.
Yeah, he's inspiring. Listen, I was one of the lucky ones. I was very lucky, but in that battle, mentality is everything. The most important thing is to attack it head on and be strong mentally, and there's no one stronger in that department than Pat. And listen, we all wish him well. He's a top, top man with a lovely family.
So that's the chances of Hazapur. We haven't mentioned Massar at all yet. He's obviously linked in through various lines like the Guineas. Godolphin would just love to have a Derby winner in blue. In fact, to be honest, they'd just like to have a classic winner.
They'd like to have a winner.
At the moment. But.
But when we talk, Richard, when we talk, and it might be one for Francesca actually, when all these Aidan O'Brien horses and the tactics, why Godolphin run one? Why do they not try and mess it up for Ballydoyle and get stuck in with a few contenders to help Massa? I don't understand.
Well, he doesn't run in the same blue colours, but DXB is owned by Jake Mahan.
Shut up!
Sacrifice for Massa. Yeah.
And he likes to go forward, doesn't he?
Very funny.
No, it's a good question, actually. It is a good question.
They do happen occasionally. Once every blue.
Last year they had quite a few, didn't they? Between Best Solution and Ben Battle and all of those.
Well, they got totally outmanoeuvred in the Guineas, didn't they?
Well, it's fair. I was saying that my only comment. There's been some spectacular disasters when they've attempted this in the past. They just don't seem anywhere near as good at it.
No, it's been a long time since Fantastic Light in Galileo.
Yes, yeah. Which was about the crowning moment.
They don't have the strength and depth though. Like Coolmore have a huge amount of strength and depth. They don't have that. Mm. It's just not there.
Going back to the Guineas though. I know Massar was beaten when he was quite well fancied in the Guineas, but if you watch the race through again, of the horses that finished in the placings, he was the only one who never got any cover. He had to, we call it, face the breeze the whole way. He never really got a chance to switch off. He was always kind of ploughing his own furrow down the centre left of the track, and maybe it looked like he didn't quite see it out. Maybe it was a bounce factor from a really good run in the Craven when he won by 9 lengths, and maybe you could think, well, is a step up to a mile and a half really going to be his thing? But on pedigree, it definitely is. He's by a Derby winner from the family of Urban Sea, so it's definitely a big tick for him.
Yeah, but his mum actually won a UAE Derby as well. Monte Carlo Barcelona celebrating before the line. Where have we seen that before? Well, we saw it afterwards, actually, rather than before. And one we're going to come on and talk about now is Knight to Behold. And we can actually hear from his trainer, Harry Dunlop, who's looking to build on a family tradition of Epsom success. And he was also at Breakfast with the Stars when he spoke to Francesca.
I was really impressed by your horse, Knight to Behold, winning the Linkfield Derby trial. I thought he did it impressively from the front and still managed to kick away in the last couple of furlongs when he probably did a few things wrong early on.
Absolutely. I mean, it wasn't the plan to go and make the running. I think there was just a little bit of concern by the jockeys about the first race. There was a bit of rain, a bit of watering on the bend. I think everyone was a little bit nervous about going on, and obviously our horse broke very well from the gate, was a bit free for the sort of first furlong and a bit. But what I loved is he then just came to the front and then he just relaxed and dropped it. I think what was the most exciting thing I saw was you were going up the hill and he just let him go on, and he sort of took 10 lengths away from them and then obviously got round the bend, got himself organised, and obviously the likes of Kew Gardens, which, you know, is no mug. He's got, you know, okay, he's not probably the top of the pecking order by any means at Ballydoyle, but it was just lovely to see him scoot away from him and stay on, which I think, you know, obviously is majorly important.
He looks like quite an exuberant character. How do you harness that at Epsom with all the hustle and bustle of so many runners and the day itself?
I agree. I mean, God, it's my first Derby runner. I've had a runner in the Oaks, but I know it's always a well-worn worry. I think is that, you know, we're going to obviously keep him quiet beforehand, and I think what I'd like him to do is obviously just be led a little bit just out onto the track, which he'll obviously be doing because he's in a parade, and just fingers crossed, you know, he relaxes with Richard. And just takes his time right until the start, which obviously is a long way.
You say it's your first Derby runner, so how do you approach it? Do you ask other people who have been there and done it for advice?
Yeah, obviously my father won two of them, and my brother's won a couple of Oaks. So, you know, I've got that people to ask, which is fantastic. But everybody does something different, and it is fascinating how everybody says something differently. At the end of the day, he's running a trial. I'd leave it at that, really. I'm not going to start taking him to Weirdo Gallops, and I'm too nervous to do that.
But just probably wrapping him up in cotton wool until
a bit of that goes on, yeah, absolutely.
And what would it mean to win it?
Oh, fantastic. I mean, I think, you know, everyone says to be champion trainer or anything, but I think at the end of the day, this horse has won a trial. It is extraordinary, the sort of media interest, the general public. I live in a village called Lambourne, and after he won at Lingfield, I went into the co-op local shop, and everyone said, well done, fantastic, got an exciting Derby horse. And it suddenly, you know, it's a different, just holds this aura of the Derby, and I think to win it would be, you know, incredible.
Thanks to Harry. What do we make of Knight to Behold's chances? Was that an enterprising bit of riding in that Lingfield Derby trial that showed him to better effect over Kew Gardens than their respective abilities?
I think it was, but I don't think he was flattered. I think the sectional times confirmed that he did it on merit. Maybe on another day, Kew Gardens might have been a bit closer to him and made more use of his stamina, but I wouldn't like to knock Knight to Behold. I don't think he'll be leading in the Derby, but I certainly expect him to be good and forward. Look, he's unexposed. He's bred to stay all day, and I'm sure he will. He wouldn't be on my short list, but I wouldn't disregard him either.
He came down the hill like I sometimes come downstairs when I'm hungover. He was all over the place at Lingfield coming down the hill.
Yeah, I don't know.
I was just going to say, how big a worry is that for Saturday?
I don't think he was as bad as you say he was. I feel like it was a little bit loose on the corner at Lingfield that day from memory, so that probably didn't help him. It's funny, isn't it? There's two different schools of thought about coming down the hill. I remember asking Harry at Epsom, I said, is it a question of giving horses as much experience downhill so that they then get used to it and get better at it? And he said, well, that's one theory, but the other one is just give it to them for the first time, because yeah, then they might not know that.
Yeah, interesting enough, that's Willie Carson's theory. Yeah. So you wonder if the John Dunlop come
down
the air,
idea
of, yes, you actually don't get any better at it, you know what's coming and you back off it.
Exactly, so there's different ways of looking at it. But Knight to Behold, I just was really impressed by his action, by his looks. He looks a beautiful individual by See the Stars, and I just thought he wasn't flattered. Yes, he was a bit keen early doors, but in a Derby with the extra pace on, he'd be able to settle better. And it would just be wonderful for Harry Dunlop to have a dog.
Yeah, and also for the breeder as well, because he bred Millenary, so had good horse with Prezzelli, and Knight to Behold is a homebred out of a Welsh stud farm where they've stood 10 to 12 mares down.
Did you say early doors?
What did I say?
Early doors. It's a real good English football phrase. I love it.
Is it? Yeah.
I'm changing you.
Seeing as we've spent half an hour talking about DXB, we should mention Kew Gardens, who obviously thrashed him. thrashed him
in the Zetland
last season, yeah, in the Zetland. I thought it was interesting that when Michael Tabor, one of the leading Coolmore owners, was being asked about Saxon Warrior, he was talking about Saxon's doing all the right things, but he asked for the outsiders. Kew Gardens was the one he mentioned. He said you can make excuses for Lingfield.
Listen to John Lavery of his two favourites.
He lost his shoe that day, and you can definitely make a case that the time before that he was running over a shorter trip than ideal. So look, at a big price, if you want to tilt at something at a big price, he could easily be another one to go for. Kew Gardens.
Okay, I want to end by asking you all for the potential winner. And also, if you had to have a bet now at the race.
I've had a bet.
Okay. And whilst you think about that, I just want to round up a couple of the other people who sent us in their famous Derby memories. Alex Cross. I thought he was an investigator. Nashwan. He remembered well, saying a much underrated horse. A lot of people from a certain generation, Charlie Williams, Neil the Pill Garlic, who was the best named one to reply, remember the Lester Piggott, Willie Carson clash between the Minstrel and Hotgrove.
Minstrel. Yeah. We've got a feature on Lester Piggott. The great Bruff Scott.
You'd think this wasn't planned, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Don't miss that on Saturday. With Bruff's dulcet tones on it. It'd be television magic.
So that was a very popular one. So, time to nail your colours to the mast. I'll move round. Well, let's go. Ladies first.
Yeah, put her under pressure first.
Ed.
Well played, Sarah. Well played.
Jessica.
Every time... With the Aiden horses, every time I fancy one, it doesn't win, and every time I don't fancy one, it wins. Obviously, it's very hard to look past Saxon Warrior, and we'll all be going, oh yeah, well that was the obvious one, when he does win. So yes, probably he's the one to pick as the winner. But if I was going to have a bet, I'd probably put it on Knight to Behold.
Knight to Behold.
Okay. I think Saxon Warrior is on the drift. I think he will probably go odds against round across the board. At some stage, maybe even on the day. Look, he's the likeliest winner. He really is. And I know that no prizes for originality there, but I find it hard to see him beaten. If you wanted an each-way alternative, I'd row in with Ed with DXB.
Would you back him at even money, though? If you had the choice of a bet today, which would you put him each-way horse, that's fine, but would DXB override him? People are sitting at home listening to this, want a bet.
It would be my nature to look for the bigger price alternative, right. But I think you would see worse, even money shots than Saxon Warrior.
Okay. Emma?
On the track, I wouldn't want to back him at that price. If it was the Curra and he's even money, happy days. But at Epsom, no. I think he is the most likely winner, and it would be great for the sport if he goes and wins, because if Cracksman has won the day before and you've got these two very exciting horses to clash potentially later on in the season, that'd be great. In terms of a bet, Zabriskie each way.
You say exciting for the sport. I mean, if Saxon Warrior wins the Derby on Saturday, then for the sport, we've got a potential Triple Crown winner, which for everybody, for ITV, for horse racing, would just be fantastic, because that's a story that it's a sports story, not just a racing story. That's a sports story that will be on front and back pages. Mm-hmm. So I personally hope that Saxon Warrior does win by 10 lengths, and I think he might. I think he's very, very good. But I have backed DXB at exactly the same price now as he was many weeks ago.
He is shortening.
Is he?
Yeah, this market is changing as we're talking.
He'll lengthen after this. But I'd love him to go from either near the front from the off, but Sylvester, as you come down that hill, go for home, and it'll be catch me if you can.
Jason Weaver style.
Yeah, not that early.
What about you, Richard?
Saxon Warrior, the most likely winner. I would very... Even money is just too short, but I genuinely think he'll win. I think he will win well. Young Rascal, I think, is the potential unexposed horse that hasn't been given enough credit by us, maybe, but he's been given plenty of credit by the market in recent days. Mm-hmm. I think if you were looking at 12-1 with his profile, it might have been interesting. But
he's almost shortened too much now, hasn't he?
Yeah, a little. I think he doesn't come from the same form lines, I suppose, as well, which probably helps, but. Well, good luck to everyone. If you're listening, good luck with your Derby selections. Maybe in 20 years' time, you'll be emailing a podcast saying Saxon Warrior or even DXB was the one that you you remember most. Ed in his dotage, you'll be phoning up.
Man is likely a nightmare.
I hope at least it gives you some more entertainment watching the show on Saturday. And a reminder that the opening show starts at 9 o'clock on Saturday morning. So if you're a regular, it lasts for an hour. It's on ITV4, and that is our coverage from the opening show on Saturday morning. We look forward to you joining us hopefully tomorrow. Remember, this is recorded on Thursday night for two great days racing at the Derby Festival 2018.